Hello, everyone. This is Frank Shines with Let In But Left Out. Today's topic is AI and the future of work, how to make money and not become part of what's known as the useless class, which we'll talk about a little bit later. I'm joined today by my brother and my sister, big sister, Granison. How you doing today?
Granison Shines here. Awesome, man. How are you?
Hey, all good. Out here in sunny Florida, we got, you know, we got dibs on the Super Bowl, man.
So, yes, you did. Yes. That's awesome.
We're joined also by someone else from the West Coast. Umer's out today, so in his stead, we've got
Trudy.
Trudy, how you doing?
Hi, I'm from sunny California. It's not real sunny right now, but it's still off and on. I think we're pretty spoiled here.
Up there in the Sacramento neck of the woods, the capital, huh?
Yep, the capital. I work with the state of California, the franchise tax board, where people pay their taxes.
Specifically
with business entities, helping them get back in good standing. And with the coronavirus, we know that there's a lot of businesses that need some help. So,
well, we want to hear more about that. So let us know as we get into some of that discussion, because you've got a unique perspective.
Yeah.
Particularly California's really been struggling, having some challenges. So, let's get started as usual. We've got a lineup of the news today that we'll touch on. And again, Umer's out, but we've got Granison Shines down in Arizona, and we've got Trudy. And Trudy, give me your full name, because you know you've remarried.
Oh, Trudy Shines Morgan.
Shines Morgan out in Sacramento.
Shines Morgan.
And this is Frank in Tampa. So in the news, a number of different items. Let's kind of take them one by one. We'll talk a little bit about the Super Bowl since we are in Tampa City, and it's going to be a great match. We'll see. Other topic in the news, white supremacist threat in the U.S. Smartmatics has sued for $2.7 billion relating to fake news, accusations of what they believe is fake news surrounding their software used to count election votes. The Senate passed Biden's $1.9 trillion relief plan. And there's been some ongoing housing crisis as that's deepening amid the coronavirus, despite this recent pass of the relief plan. The Keystone XL pipeline workers, looks like there's some interesting information there on Biden revoking that license moving forward. And we'll turn our attention last to Jeff Bezos leaving Amazon, which is really the biggest part of the news probably this week, particularly from a technology and, you know, let in but left out perspective. You know, if you guys remember in the book, we've talked about let in but left out. One chapter is let in tech disruption, but left out people transition. So that's going to really be the topic of discussion for today. And the last news item with Jeff Bezos leaving Amazon is a nice little segue into that topic. So let's jump into it, turn it over to you guys. What are you guys thinking about the Super Bowl? Trudy, you want to give us your
Super
thoughts?
Bowl.
I like the orange. The orange is pretty.
That's awesome. I wouldn't expect that one.
Are you rooting for the team in orange, huh?
Team Orange, that's Orange Chocolate Day. That's why I feel day, the artist day. Yeah, I like that.
I hear you.
That's who's going to win, right? Based on the Orange Chakra. That's
yeah, the there Orange Chakra Day, sure.
Nice. Nice.
All good. Whatever works.
Big showdown on. Exactly. Whatever works there. But the big showdown, the 25-year-old versus what, the 43-year-old, 41-year-old?
Yeah.
How old Tom Brady is. That's going to be interesting. He got experience there. I mean, he has some experience, man. So it's hard to beat experience, even though the youthfulness, but he doesn't play like he's old anyway. So youthfulness does count. I'm pretty sure this he's sharpened the mind, sharpened the head. They got to the Super Bowl. So let's see what happens. Interesting seeing that.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So if you had to pick, you're gonna go with experience.
I'm gonna go with experience on this one. Yes.
I'm leaning the same way. I'm gonna go with Tom Brady. I think there's, you know, a heck of a lot. I mean, obviously Patrick is just an amazing talent with the Kansas City Chiefs. But I'm thinking the same. I mean, This is what he's been in 20 years with New England Patriots. Tom Brady has.
Right. Yep.
First season, he comes in with Tampa and bam, he's back in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, exactly.
That's saying
first
something.
First season. That's saying a lot. Yeah. That's saying that. That's why I'm going with the experience. That says a whole lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
You guys, experience is good.
Yeah. Right. And the leadership, obviously he's brought everybody else up to a different level of performance.
Yeah. He made them raise the bar and they played very well. And here they are at the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Okay. We will see what happens. Kickoff time, 6:30 Eastern time, right here in Tampa.
Cool. Yeah.
So on a less buoyant note, week review and the week says the growing white supremacist threat in the wake of the January 6th insurrection, federal officials are warning of more attacks by violent domestic extremists. So what you thinking? What are you thinking, Granison? I'll turn it over to Trudy next.
Yeah, I've heard that Homeland Security has been getting a number of threats and they've been watching a number of people and the threats continuing to increase. I was listening to them talk about that on NPR earlier this week. And this is something you can definitely see coming. You could see it coming, especially after the insurrection on January 6th. It just became, I'm not surprised that it took this long for it to just really come up on the radar screen. The white supremacists have been really trying to make sure this is their country, that they make the rules and everything abides by them. And it's blatant at times, even here in Arizona. I've seen it before. Mm-hmm. And here we are. Here we are, man. Here we are. It's just ridiculous. But this is where some people can't move past their own wrong thinking, and here we have it.
Well, it's you know, you look at the whole history of human beings, right? Those who aren't like us, there's always been the outsider viewpoint, and whether you call it racism or sexism or, you know, anything where someone's differences based upon religion.
Right.
You know, it seems to be, you know, we got some great superpowers of human beings, but this seems to be one of our great weaknesses as human beings well. So what are you thinking, Trudy? What are you hearing out there in Sacramento, and what's your take on some of this?
I truly believe that there's the extremes for both sides, mm-hmm. you know, blacks and whites, religion, non-religion, Democrat, Republic. I think there's those extremes on both ends, and I think that they influence what's being seen. I personally have not seen it. I certainly have seen it in past. There's no doubt about it. It exists. Is it growing? I don't know. I think that the louder you are, the more you're going to be heard, but I'm not sure what I have to do some more research on that. I'm not seeing that.
So you mentioned, is it growing? So is that the right word? I'm not saying you're wrong. What I'm saying is that it's also being more unveiled. It's also being more uncovered. It's being more blatant. Is that I'm definitely seeing it more and how people are even dealing with other people here in Arizona and how people are addressing others throughout the other parts of the United States. So growing, it's been there. We know that it's been there. It's always been there, right? So it's the candle is being pulled from underneath the bed, and now the light of white supremacy, from my standpoint, starts to show. It's always been there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It's always been there. I think that there's a lot of things. I think the internet, the social media has definitely created an environment where more is visible than what we saw before. And so more people are becoming more aware. But yeah, I think more aware, and I think more aware on many, many levels of different types of hatreds that exist.
Yeah. So last year, boy, time flies, 2019 actually, I spent about 4 or 5 months up in Philadelphia with a bunch of military, FBI, other intel agencies. And, you know, we were, they were tracking this stuff, right? And they're starting to see it increase. And the other thing that struck me was the difference in the younger military people versus when I first went in. And you could definitely see the difference already in the ranks. And it showed up in this latest insurrection. 22 of the 169 people that entered the Capitol, stormed the Capitol, and caused damage and so forth, 22 of them were military.
Military,
and, yep. And yes, and then there's another percent that are law enforcement officials.
Law enforcement, different yep, types. Absolutely. So,
you know, and I'll tell you from Florida, I've seen it personally, and I saw it when I flew a couple of times up into St. Louis with Express Scripts. I won't go into the details of the stories of it, but it's not like anything I've seen before. And it's, you know, the data that's being tracked by these online, part of what I was studying was cybersecurity and how technology and things are being tracked and so forth, but they're seeing a higher number of this than they've ever seen before when they track this data. And they're seeing it higher than any foreign terrorist attack. They're seeing it right, higher on the white supremacist side versus any other type of, whether people of color of any other type that's racist. So the right, data showing right now that something's different. And I do agree, you know, particularly for African-Americans, I mean, you know, been over 400 years, we've been terrorized from day one. So this is nothing new to me. The number of times I've had, you know, people chase after me from a pickup truck, yelling and screaming and hanging out with a white friend and said, wow, I didn't believe they actually did this crap, right? It's like, run, man, right? Right. You know, you're sitting here and sit here and pontificate and argue about this thing. This is my life. Now you might walk away, but I ain't, right? I ain't gonna walk away from it. I saw that, that happened to me from Seattle to Mississippi and more than once. So, you know, many of those close friends, they said, wow, I didn't really realize it. Now, I do agree that for the first time, a lot of other people who'd never really realized it are realizing it. I remember Michelle and I, we were working with our personal finance manager, and this was about 3-4 years ago. And there was an incident that had come up, you know, young Black man had passed away recently, and we were kind of going through our financial stuff, and we just kind of got on that topic. Something came up, pinged up on Michelle's notification that, oh, another Black guy just got killed or something. And we just happened to be sitting there in a meeting with him. And this is a white gentleman, millennial, comes from a very successful, prominent financial background family who's passed on those lessons learned, and that's why he got into this industry. And you know, he goes, I can't believe this, I don't think it's that bad, but I, you know, I just can't believe some of the things that we're starting to see. He goes, but I think it's just kind of an aberration. I go, no, it's been around for a long time. That's for the first time people are getting a hold of their video and learning how to use it, just like what happened in the 60s when television came out, right? Before television, it didn't matter. But once it started, people are sitting there at their table, and they're watching people get attacked by dogs, kids killed in churches, it becomes real, right? And the same thing recently happened when you got someone with his knee on the neck for, you know, damn near 9 minutes, and everybody sees it. You can't walk away from it. You can't deny it any longer. So I agree that for the first time, I think a lot of people are seeing it, maybe that didn't see it before, but purely from a military intel and home security perspective, they track this stuff and they're seeing it increase. They're looking at the numbers. So something.
Yeah. I mean, I think that definitely the economy certainly has a big effect on
yes,
it, and the fact that we're able to visually see what's going on, whereas before it was kind of hidden. Mm-hmm. I think growing in that sense, because definitely when, you know, for all other ways of describing this or saying this, when the white man's job is threatened, which it is or has been,
right.
Especially when they had the manflation, they called it some years ago, where, right. you yeah. know, the man lost their job, and specifically the white man, right. definitely threatened, and it has increased definitely since then. There's no doubt, and because of that, there is going to be that hatred, you know, because they used to be able to just go and get, you know, grab our jobs or grab the black man or the person of color's job. But because right. of laws that are in place, that's no longer able to be happened. I mean, to happen. And so then they're you know, without a job for the first time. I mean, the white man is without a job, and that's them fighting words.
Right. Yeah. Grandison, you got a last point on this and we'll move to the next topic.
Yeah, absolutely. So like you were talking about in the 60s, when television came out, when the information couldn't travel as fast and as wide as it can now. Obviously because of the internet, everyone has a phone that's connected to the internet, that has video that's connected to the internet. The information can be disseminated very, very quickly. And so that's another reason why, like the data you're talking about, Frank, why people are starting to actually be, quote, finger quote, woke, as they call it, mm-hmm. regarding this information now, because they're actually starting to see it, even though it's been there for us. We've noticed it. We've been a part of it for a very, very long time. Some people are just now starting to see it, and they're shocked. So my Caucasian friends, they're a bit shocked that it's been going on. And I'm like, yeah, this has been like, yeah, seriously? Yeah, I've been pulled over many times just was driving while being like, no way, yeah. So it's just, yeah. they're just starting to see it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Next topic, Smartmatic sues Giuliani and a number of the hosts from Fox News, Lou Dobbs and Maria Bartiromo, and also I guess Sidney Powell was the other attorney, right. who was involved in a number of those different lawsuits, that 60 court hearings addressing the voting fraud issue, that in all 60 cases found it not to be the case, and twice where the Supreme Court came out and said there's no justification of any systemic voter fraud. So the story behind this was that, you know, according to, so there are two major companies that it's called Dominion Voting Systems, which is the hardware company that provides a lot of the voting technology. And then there are software companies, Smartmatic, that was accused by Fox reporters, Sidney Powell and Giuliani, as rigging the election through voter fraud using their software in this case. And so they've come out with all the data as part of a big lawsuit for $2.7 billion against Fox News, Giuliani, Sidney Powell, and some of the hosts, the star hosts, such as Lou Dobbs and Mark Bartiromo. So So what are your thoughts about this, Shree? Have you heard about this voting stuff?
I didn't hear about the actual lawsuit. During the election, certainly I heard, you know, that the software was providing numbers that didn't seem to make sense. So yeah, I mean, I've heard about that. So yeah, let's see what happens. I mean, the data isn't going to lie. Either the system was jumping around and mm-hmm. doing things it shouldn't do, or it wasn't. It should be clear to see. I mean, a software, you should be able to see the records. You should be able to see the trail. Exactly. Yeah, and it shouldn't have any inconsistencies in it. So yeah, should be able to see it. I'm excited to hear about it.
So so Grant, so let me throw this past you. I mean, one of the things that probably good and bad about the US, it's known for its lawsuits, right?
Yeah.
And it's defamation and all these types of things. But this may be the only thing that fights disinformation, right? Where you got to go in with data and a court of law. Yep. And if you're at risk of defaming people, because you can just think you can say whatever the hell you want, you know, whether individual or corporation, left, right, center, doesn't matter. Maybe this is one of the ways to really start to counter it. Maybe this is really the message that Smartmatic is trying to send, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's been happening for a while. I mean, and not always does, I mean, we've been, these lawsuits have been, different lawsuits like this have been going on for quite some time. But a lot of times it doesn't pan out to anything. So let's see if the truth actually, you know, gets heard. So I'd like to, you know.
Gresham?
My standpoint on this matter, we know we live in a very litigious society. And for me, this one is actually justified. Here you have an organization who has a reputation of being collecting data that's very, very sensitive. And then Fox News allows or continues to allow people like Giuliani and some of the others to come on and put a bad light onto the name of this organization and software. So if I were them, I would be looking at something like this as well. I'm like, okay, you're trying to now say that our system, which you have not proved at all, that our system is being tainted or being manipulated, exactly. And I'm like, no, we've invested a lot of time, energy, money, and other regulations to make sure that this is secure. And here you are trying to defame our name. Yeah, I'm going to get you for that. Yeah.
So well, this one for me is get it, do it. Yeah. Do it and prove it. But it seems that you're saying straight away that that's not the case. We don't know. Right.
Well,
we
I'm saying that
they, it's a good, I mean, I'm glad they're doing it. I would like to see what the results are, because definitely defamation should not, I mean, you know.
That's exactly. Great. I'm saying this would be a good slap on the wrist, even more so a slap on the wrist, but this would be a good way to shut someone up and have them think about what type of information they are going to disseminate, whether it's fraud or whether it's real, next time. Okay, be careful, because here you are spreading information that's not accurate. Okay, I'm gonna get you for it. Right. You have to answer for that. You have to be held accountable. So yeah, this one to me is justified.
Yep. We'll see how it all rolls out. But yeah, I agree. I mean, if you're gonna go out and speak, you better have the data to prove, right? If you're on news and you're claiming and reporting information, then you better have the data to prove it. If
better
not,
have the data to prove it. There you go.
Okay, next, Senate passes Biden's $1.9 trillion relief plan. Let's talk about that. The other big news that ties into this is the recent information coming out. And this is from a couple of major sources, one being the 11 million households based upon the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia, showing that the people who have been losing their jobs since the pandemic has resulted in $11 billion in rental arrears. And then the big financial company, Moody's Analytics, they ran a similar report, but also looked at, you know, all delinquencies. So beyond just the arrears. So it could have been, you know, related to other utility payments and late fees and so forth. And their figure came out not to be $11 billion, but $53 billion. So somewhere between $10 to $50 billion range is impacting a lot of mid-class and lower class families in America because of the pandemic. So what are your thoughts about the $1.9 trillion? Do you think that's gonna help address this issue, and any other broad discussions around this relief plan and the housing crisis?
Trudy, you want to go first?
Oh, okay.
You guys seeing stuff out there? And
money is good, you know, definitely money helps if it's going to be used in the right way. Where is this money coming from? I think, you know, just making money and lessening the dollar, which it's already been lessened. I find that a problem, but okay. So let's just talk about the fact that we need the funds. Okay. So we need the funds. It's going to be distributed. I think that all funds that are distributed to people should be distributed in a way where it's going to benefit them, and that it's not just a free-for-all where they have this free money. Anybody that gets free money per se isn't going to necessarily use it right. Is it our decision to decide that? I don't know. I think so. I think that anybody, if they're a single parent, or they have medical issues, or they have a business, I think there should be some type of information that they should provide, as far as, I don't know, it's hard to tell. I mean, who's gonna review it? Who's gonna do, I don't know. I have my, it's just the way it's going to be used. I think that if you give money to a person that doesn't use it right in the beginning, their money that they already have, are they really going to use the money? I have a friend that is a manager of some homes or apartments, and they still haven't paid their rent, even with having this extra money, you know, since the crisis in March, they still haven't paid rent, even though they can. So, you know, there are people aren't paying their bills. They're still not paying their bills. I mean, those that they just feel, hey, you know, I got some free money. Let me go buy a car. Let me go, you know, buy some stuff. Not many of them aren't putting it to where it should go.
Right. Benson.
Interesting position there, Trudy. I see it on both sides. I think there needs to be some relief. Where the money come from? Well, it's coming from the taxpayers. We're obviously going to end up paying for it. Even when they print money, we're still going to make sure. I mean, it's gonna come out of our pockets. We know that for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, it definitely has its place in some business. There are going to be people on both sides of the equation, right? Depending between both ways, there'll be some people that will be responsible with it, and there'll be some people who will be very, very irresponsible with it. Yeah. And it's going to be. And I think there's the vetting process there really isn't one per se. It just, okay, besides you, if you're paying taxes, if you have paid taxes and they have record of it, then you get the money, right? Other than that, I think.
Some people that don't even pay taxes are getting it.
I'm sorry?
Even people that don't pay taxes are getting it.
Oh, well, interesting. Well, that's where the information or the vetting should definitely transpire. I heard from someone else at one point in time that was definitely on the people who are paying taxes. The businesses actually have to apply for it. They have to show information and payroll. I know there's some people there that have manipulated the system as well on that side, but it's just something that we need to have, especially if the businesses are in need and need to stay afloat to keep the economy going. I don't mind that happening, but
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I see the businesses, and
some of them are definitely struggling and can use
help. I agree.
Yeah.
So I'll just chime in real quick on this, and we'll move to the last couple of news items and jump into the topic for the day. But this is a real interesting one for me, because we had a discussion a couple of weeks ago about, you know, let in virtual and left out reality. And we talked about what's real and what isn't real, right? And the one thing we talk about in the book is, if you really want to understand what's real and not real, you have to ask yourself the important question that Hebrew historian Yuval Noah Harari asked, and that is, does it suffer? Things that suffer are real. Things that don't suffer are not real, right? So we talked about a fictitious business statement. It's called, and the whole legal argument around a company is based upon the principle of fictitious business statements, which is to say it's not real. A business doesn't suffer. People suffer. Animals suffer. Planets can suffer. But corporations don't suffer, right? There are things that we create. Democracies per se don't suffer. We create these to make things happen, right? And it struck me, you know, in one of the last conversations while we we went around this topic is because we were talking about virtual reality, you know, meaning online, is that real versus and how people kind of swept up in these things. But, you know, when I was out in Silicon Valley and you see how the game is played out there, they create nothing, right? Something out of nothing. Out of nothing, you create a $1 billion company. Mm-hmm. And literally, these people get paid, right? Money is getting moved to them. 20-year-old kids for 10 years, example, yep, with Facebook's, and they get billions and billions of dollars, right? And someone asked for a nickel and they're a little bit poor and they need a relief, they can't get it. Most corporations pay no taxes. We're gonna talk about Amazon here in a bit. They pay almost no taxes.
Yeah.
So, you know, we talk about welfare, we gotta understand welfare for whom? For the corporation or for the individual?
Yeah.
And when it comes time to bail out companies, we didn't have any problem doing that very quickly during Wall Street, when that Wall Street bailout came. And despite all the accountability issues around that, no one went to jail.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah.
So, you know, and when I lived in Brazil, you know, we saw the same type of thing. Money is fictitious. Money is just something you create to get people to cooperate. And as long as there's trust and cooperation, money works and it grows. The other thing that Yellen has talked about, the new Treasury Secretary, unanimously, you know, voted in for good reason, given her credentials. She said, throw as much money at this problem as you can. We have never had a major crisis where we look back after the fact and said, we should have done less. In every single case, they found they should have done more. The other thing is, when you look at the
for data, business or for personal?
Pardon me?
For both? For business or for personal? That statement that you just made.
Whenever we've had, yeah, but for both. They've been talking for both, right? Okay. And in other words, it's kind of the same thing with the military. The military's got this thing. One of the things, you know, you wonder why, you know, people say, well, why are people so committed in the military and they leave the military and never find the same type of camaraderie? And it's because we've got these things, right? One is called, you know, leave no vet behind, right? Never leave your wingman, Semper Fi. There's a certain trust and credibility that no matter what happens, we're all in this together. So once you start trying to say, oh, I'm going to try to piecemeal this out and determine, oh, should this person get it or not get it? The amount of time you'll spend wasting during the pandemic, you're going to just end up, it's going to cost you more. And the fact that now you got to figure out all the extra money you got to put in managing it and trying to keep track of all this stuff and everything else, it's not even worth it, right? Yeah. When you got a crisis, you're gonna have, you've got the lowest interest rates ever, less than 1%. 1%, if you invest in your people have consistently in this country far to return far more than 1%, 7 to 12%. So you'll more than make up for it in terms of investing in your people for a year or whatever to get us all through this pandemic. And so from my perspective, I think, you know, you gotta do it. You gotta put the money in there and you don't try to be overly concerned about, there are gonna be games played on either side, right? From the big corporations or the small individuals. But right now we're all in this thing together, you know, and we should just kind of hunker down and get through this pandemic and make sure we've got as many people that survive it, because those people are the individuals who ultimately would generate the revenue to pay the taxes.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Keystone Pipeline, Trudy, take it away.
Oh, I brought up this topic because my husband had mentioned it. I personally haven't researched it enough. I did see, you know, some people upset that they felt that, you know, at, you know, the strike of a pen, you know, all these people lost their jobs and Black people included. And they're saying, oh yeah, Black Lives Matter. Yeah, sure, right. You know, I just lost my job just like that. And I believe the statement was something like, well, go find a job in solar or something along those lines. You know, like telling a person that doesn't know IT to go find an IT job or something. So in that sense, it I don't know. I mean, we have the, I guess, this 1.9 trillion, maybe that's supposed to help them, but,
right,
you know, I haven't heard too much about that and the effects that it's had on the you know, the Black lives that supposedly matter in this case. So.
Yep. Grandison, your thoughts? Or have you heard much about the story about this? I was aware that, you know, that he made it very clear he's going to cancel it, and he canceled it. Biden did.
Yeah. Yeah. So other than that, it's been, I haven't heard as much about it in the news, but I know that it's something that it came up, and I haven't really been tuned in with it. I know that by doing this, there are going to be, and this is the part they were talking about, just a bunch of jobs lost. I mean, how many, I'm trying to remember how many they said, 11,000 jobs or something like that. Yeah, I think 11,000. And this is a pipeline that runs from America to Canada, right?
Canada, I mean,
so
right, it's been, yeah,
down for a long time. So yeah, that's a lot of jobs. And what do you, so, but Frank, we've been talking about how a lot of these manual labor jobs and or, but let me back up, let me say that. We've been talking about how people need to start positioning themselves with a high value skill set. I'm not saying go back to college.
Right.
But I am saying that a high value skill set, even some of the high value skill sets are also threatened as well. But those who are drivers and those who, some of those in construction, I mean, the robotics that are in factory workers are taking over. And that's one of those instances where if you get caught with the finger quote proverbial pants down, it's not going to be pretty. And unfortunately, this could be, and maybe one of those instances where it's just going to affect a large amount of people at one time. So.
But we're talking about gas. I mean, this is gas and oil versus solar, isn't it?
Well, that's where, of course, they want to reduce the carbon footprint, everything else in the United States. They have a huge initiative to do that. And so one way to make sure that we reduce is to start utilizing other energies, renewable energies. And that's the important piece of it. The automotive manufacturing is going the same way, which is an important aspect. And so companies are hopping on board. It's not going to be a smooth transition. We know that. But
I mean, when was the last time that you heard, you know, at least here in California, I mean, there was a period of time, I mean, it's been years since we've heard, I mean, there already has been that reduction. We haven't had any days where you can no longer, I don't know, I forget the
burn phrase. Days.
And so, yeah, burn days, these days, that's all in the past. That's no longer. We have improved.
Sure, but petroleum is not the future. Yeah, the carbon footprint has been mitigated a little bit. I mean, not by what they feel because of global warming and everything else that comes by way of it. So renewable energies like electricity or solar is going to be more mainstream, and that's where the society, we have all the initiatives from and all the lobbyists, of course they're pushing to make sure that we go to a society that has more renewable energies in terms of electricity and solar.
Well, it's, if cleaner, we're not buying it from other countries, then I think that's fine, but if we're still buying it from other countries, then there's a problem. If we're using that money to putting our workers, you know, those here in the States, out of a job, and then going and, you know, using those funds for, you know, to other countries to buy the fuel, then there's an issue, right?
Well, maybe. I mean, but we have a huge reserve, though, too, that we haven't really tapped into much. And of course, we've been buying from over, and that was been part of the huge debate, we've been buying from overseas for the longest. And that has to do, I mean, you know, there's a lot, it can go deep down that rabbit hole. I won't have to go there, but there's a lot going on there. But we have the resources ourselves for petroleum, enough petroleum to suffice for the United States. However, going from petroleum to a cleaner use of energy or cleaner energy is something that we have really been. And you know, Biden, he's all about, he got Kerry as the gentleman to run the,
right,
because of global warming, right? So right, he's going to be on it, and he's going to make sure that any initiative that is, from my perspective, any initiative that is over has an overabundance of attention and or spending in terms of petroleum, he's going to cut it back.
Yeah,
that's where I see him going.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with cutting back. As long as we're not, like you said, we do have the reserve, but from what I hear, we're going to be paying other countries for gas still. I mean,
well, we already are.
Well, no, but I thought we were trying to stop to litigate that, right?
Right. Yeah.
Because we have enough, like you were saying. So why are we still paying other countries for it when we have our reserve?
From my perspective, it's not that we're still going after that portion. I mean, this is going to take away a lot of jobs, and this is going to make sure that we start transitioning over to renewable energies as this gets closed down. That's the big push.
Yeah.
That's the big push. And that's where he's getting pressure from the lobbyists. He's getting pressure from other institutions to make sure that, hey, we reduce this waste in terms of what petroleum, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, converting petroleum is very messy. We've been doing this for a very, very long time. Plus, the energy that we transform it into turns into this huge carbon footprint, smog, everything else, right? So he's going to mitigate that at all costs in terms of I believe you're going to probably see an even bigger push for electric vehicles and solar come out even more. And hopefully even more aggressive timelines. But of course, we got to do a lot of conversion of the factories and everything else. But there's going to be a strong push and continue to have a strong push from Biden. So I don't think this is going to be the first thing that we're going to see in regards to the major change of something that's going to, unfortunately, kill jobs, mitigate jobs, but there's will hopefully be some other opportunities on these other technologies as they emerge, even more mainstream.
Yeah, I mean, this really hits on, you know, the topic that we're going to be, that we're talking about today around, you know, the technology disruption. This is a perfect example of the technology disruption that's starting to impact them.
Yep.
And technology disruption usually comes in the form of something that impacts your government decisions too. Because the people, right, even Exxon, I work with Exxon, I work with Shell, work with all of them in Houston, work with, we're supposed to do work with Enron Natural Gas. We walked away from that contract. We work with Midcon Natural Gas instead down there in Houston at the time. And you look at where they were when I was working with them 20 years ago versus where they're putting their money right now, and they are investing their money like crazy. Exxon has dropped like a rock. Number one oil company, highest, you know, market value company for many years, and now they're not even close, right? Amazon and all the other companies are ahead of them, and now they're moving like crazy, investing in solar, wind, turbine, all that type of thing, because they see where the fuck is going. So I agree that they talk about canceling, the way Bloomberg puts it in their opinion poll, point here is canceling Keystone XL heralds the end of fossil fuels, not jobs. Large numbers of oil workers will need to find new employment, but their skills will transfer, and a government should help smooth the way. And I agree, that's what we should be doing. As we talk about in the book, we talk about the Marshall Plan, the GI Bill that existed during World War II, and the way that we have to do the same thing for these types of government efforts to help people transition. The $1.9 trillion should help, but we clearly have got to do a lot more than we've traditionally done in helping people make this transition as the world changes.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, the transition is the key. And I would hope that, you know, the unemployment, but I mean, so many people are complaining about that just not coming, the unemployment that is. Everything's so slow, you know? So when we're talking about helping them with their skills and things like that, the transition, you know, I mean, this is right now. They need to pay their bills now. They need to, you know, and it's just not happening right now. It's, you know, something that could be, you know, a year from now or something from what they're seeing. So,
right. So our next, our topic of the day is this transition, and we'll just use the conversation around Bezos leaving Amazon to head right into that. So what's the legacy of Amazon and the future of work, Grandison, from your perspective? What has he done? How does it relate to this skills thing that we were just talking about with the Keystone Pipeline and with the future of work, how to make money and not become part of the useless class?
Yeah, he has built a fairly large company. First started selling books, obviously, and now everything under the sun. Mm-hmm. He's his company, technology and logistics both. And he's put a staple in the industry, that's for sure. I mean, it's been awesome. I mean, I can't tell you how much stuff we get from Amazon. I get from Amazon only because it's mm-hmm. the way to shop now. I don't have to leave home and I want to have it delivered at my door, which is phenomenal, right? And I think that poses some opportunities. I think I saw some of the numbers. It was hard to believe. I think that they had a really very, very good quarter. And I think it was 100 and something billion, 127 billion and net like 7 billion, something like that. So I was thinking, wow, it takes 118 billion to run that even a quarter. So it in a quarter, it's been, wow. I mean, it's a very good, very awesome feat for him. First $1 trillion company as well. At the same time, I believe there's going to be some other opportunities there that will transpire, that will come about, but also some job loss. Here's why, because I have a friend, actually Yasmin's daughter works at Amazon. And she's there going to a lot of, and she's an engineer there. And they're actually looking at a lot of robotics in their warehouse. They opened up a really nice big one here. And as they go towards more robotics, there are also going to be job losses as well. They do have a good plan, though, in terms of people being able to educate themselves for free within Amazon University and take initiative themselves and possibly reposition their career within the company. So those people who are precocious will definitely take advantage of that because they can see the writing on the hand wall. I mean, the handwriting on the wall. If they're not, they'll be left behind like other people and other industries as well. That's my take on it.
Yeah, you look at the stock, right? You're going back, you know, when they first, back in 1997, when they went public, right? $4, $2, right? And then you start seeing this really begin to take off, hit the double digits by 2009. And it's just been just an explosive exponential growth since then. Stock price is $3,352 at closing on Friday. And so he has revolutionized shopping, commerce. He's beginning to revolutionize, you know, video online with his Amazon Video Prime and things that he's got going on, the smart speakers, which brings a whole new platform to how to compute. Right, the old way is you do it through a keyboard. The new way is going to be doing it through a speakerphone, and he gets that. He knows how that's going. The robotic stuff, yeah, I've done a lot of work looking at their robotics because when I was at Express Scripts, we have a lot of warehouses, and we're looking at different types of robotics, and we always look to companies like Amazon for best practices around how to implement those types of technology. So. Yeah, I mean, he's really changed the world, definitely changed Americans' way of shopping, but definitely changed the world. And that transition, as you say, I hear the same thing in talking with friends that used to work with Express Scripts and now working at Amazon in terms of the career opportunities and opportunities for growth and development and education and things. They expect a lot out of their people. They are demanding, but I also heard, you know, the people who do well tend to stay there for decades. They don't leave. They stay for a long time. So there's something there that they must be seeing of value. What are you thinking, Trudy? Anything to add to that?
No, I think you guys have said it all. I do love the fact that they do have the Amazon University so that those that really want to, you know, transition, like Grandison was saying, they take advantage of it. And that's the key. You know, even when we were talking to my son about, you know, the types of things that should be done in order to improve your life, it is being prepared for the things that are going to happen. Now you can just put the wool over your eyes and say, hey, well, I don't know, so it doesn't matter. You know, no, right. It just doesn't work that way. You know, putting your head under the cover and saying, well, if I don't see it, it doesn't exist. It's just that mindset just isn't going to work. And there is no excuse today with all the knowledge, the free knowledge that's out there. The problem with today is not knowledge, really. I mean, anybody, we can grab that knowledge and those skills. It's all available to us for free, like Grinson was bringing out, and that we've seen. The main thing is focus and understanding it and knowing to take that action. So,
yeah,
into that, it is going to be upon the person to really take initiative to make that transition to evolve themselves.
Right.
We all have to do that continuously, evolve ourselves as a consultant and coach and trainer organizations and people. We have to stay ahead of the learning curve, right? And so having that, and I learned that from Frank a long time ago. He told me, say, hey, as a consultant, you always got to know more than your customer. You got to stay 2 or 3 steps ahead of your customer. And that, he told me that, I don't know, Frank, I think he told me that I was about maybe 17
years.
18
years. Yeah, me too. Yeah.
And I always remember that. That has been a very good piece of advice that I also share with those other young people that I have the opportunity to mentor now as well. Stay ahead of the marketplace, stay ahead of your clients, stay ahead of the curve. And so learning a new skill set and always continuously learning a new skill set, never stop learning a new skill set, can definitely evolve you and put you in a place where you might not even see yourself right now. So manual labor needs to step up.
Yeah.
Manual laborers, right? So
right.
Otherwise you have a opportunity for your job being at risk.
So the thing that you said to me years ago was, it's not about falling off the horse. It's about how quickly you're going to get back on, you know? And that was years ago. And that always stayed with me. So, I mean, you're going to fall. Things are going to happen. Mm-hmm. Things are going to change, but it's all about how quickly you're going to get back on there.
Yeah, I hear you. I've fallen a lot. Remember as a kid, they used to say, that boy is just accident prone. Remember, I used to always
get hurt
flipping, doing something. Remember that? But I learned a lot from you, watching you. You know, the nice thing about being a big sister, you watch big sisters. She plays violin. Okay, I'm going to play violin. Then you say, ooh, there's a thing called a cello. It's a lot bigger. That's how
I'm going to play the cello.
So, yeah. I mean, the same thing happened when you went off, you know, we're getting ready to graduate from high school. I'm a junior in high school. You're getting ready to graduate. I don't know if you remember what Corey, our stepmom, right, who was born in Holland and grew up during World War II, and to that, you know, to her dying days, would have nightmares hearing the bombs whenever there was thunderstorms in Seattle area. She would remind her of her childhood and the bombs from the Nazis coming down all around them during World War II as a child. And I remember her saying to you, Trudy, when you were getting ready to graduate from high school, I don't know if you remember this, but she goes, Trudy, what do you have going for you? You're a woman and you're Black in America. I don't know if you remember that, but she,
I
remember. And you know, I said, ah, damn shit. Yeah. I've only got a year to figure this out now.
Wow.
But I remember her saying that. And I remember I had conversations with her my senior year a lot about this type of stuff. And, you know, listen, we got all these books, you know, around, because dad and them always kept books. And right, she read Bhagavad Gita and all the philosophy and was always, you know, spoke 4 or 5 different languages and things like that. And I said, okay, I get it. I understand. If this is coming from, you know, pretty darn smart white lady and she's feeling the stresses and pain of work as a woman, and how she's being discriminated against.
Wow.
She's got a viewpoint and an empathetic viewpoint in terms of the ability to see things from different perspectives and brings this to light to us, right? As a white woman saying, you know, here's what you got going for you.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, I must say that, and I mean, this is something I think that is important that we realize sometimes we're so, my focus back then was my mom and my sisters. And, you know, I couldn't hear anything. I don't remember that conversation.
Right.
But I was very stressed about, wow, where are my sisters? Where is my mom? Mm-hmm. How is everybody? Yep. So even though she may have said that, it's awful, but I didn't even hear it. But I mean, I hear it now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But And that helps us to see it. Sometimes it's not what's said, you know, you have to speak to the person, the full person, and see what's going on in their head so that you can get through to them. You know, even when we're talking about these people that aren't taking the opportunity to learn these new skills, well, what's going on in their life? Are they still in survival mode? Can they really even see that there's other things going on in the world, or are they just trying to get by? Many are just trying to get by. So they can't even begin to see what we're talking about when we say AI, or when we say, you know, the knowledge is available to you on the internet. What? I'm trying to put some food on the table. They can't see it. So, you know, that's something that we need to try to help people to.
Yeah. You know, one thing, you know, in a lot of the work that I've been doing for the last 28 years has been around the intersection of social psychology, you know, human psychology, adapting to change, and the impact that globalization technology has on individuals and organizations. And so, you know, that goes right back to the most fundamental thing, right, Grandison, that you studied in psychology at San Jose State University, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's hard to think about self-actualization at the top of that pyramid if your basic needs aren't met, right? Exactly. I hear you, Trudy. I mean, that's so critical. And this is why, you know, I think it was Gandhi. Yeah, it was Gandhi who said, you know, not even God can speak to a man about heaven until he first feeds him, right? I think you're spot on. I think this is why it's so important that the transition, right? You got to help people through that transition of, okay, what are the things that are paramount in their lives that we must address first? Start with where they are before you try to take them where you want them to go.
Yeah.
Right.
And maybe this transition is we got to, you know, shore people up so they got time to stop and think and see before we can really start having this conversation to them about artificial intelligence. Now, we've got some examples, and I think it's, you know, maybe these are, you know, a few things that we threw up here. Like, many of them are familiar with Netflix. So even in their most dire mode, one way of escaping is they use Netflix. When you say, Netflix makes recommendations. That's kind of artificial intelligence, man, happening behind the scenes. Don't worry about it right now, but just kind of keep that in mind, right? Mm-hmm. Many of them go online, they go to YouTube, and YouTube, they'll do a search. You see my YouTube search in the lower left-hand corner here, Malcolm Gladwell and cryptocurrency and science fiction and Yuval Harari and lean manufacturing. These are things that come up, and the internet technology stuff is what comes up on my search because Google has looked at how I search and what I prefer to read and or view on videos. And it's using what's known as an artificial algorithm to kind of understand what I like and what I don't like. And it compares it with billions of other searches of people who also like that and makes those recommendations based upon those interests. And then finally, we have the example here of the self-driving car. And maybe not everyone has been in a self-driving car, but most people are hearing a lot more about it, particularly a lot of truck drivers are actually seeing some of the self-driving cars that are taking over the trucking industry, and they're hearing about these things. Mm-hmm. Not a whole lot different than individuals working up there on the Keystone XL pipeline. So a lot of these technologies are starting to impact people's jobs. And even if they don't understand it fully, if we can give them time to transition and we kind of show them, oh, here's YouTube and here's what it's doing. Here's Netflix and what it's doing. You know, you grab that Alexa and you got your kid talking to a speaker. Well, that's doing the same type of thing. Now imagine if those things become more and more successful, how many potential jobs can they take away if you don't reskill and relearn some things for the future of work?
Well said. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
What were you ready to say there, Ramson? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Trudy.
Oh, no, I like that analogy with Netflix. Of course, they understand that. Many times, unfortunately, they'll say, oh, man, the government's in my head or something, you know.
Right.
You know, kind of, you know, real low level thinking there.
Yeah.
But really try to help them to see the AI of it all, you know, and raise their level of understanding through something that they do know. But right. Yeah, I like that. That's good.
I like your point about starting where they are, mm-hmm. and the notion that, hey, you're a Black girl growing up in America. Hey, I have five of those, right? You have one of those, yeah. right? So it's more about, it's personal for us at this juncture. And I noticed that as they grow up, as when they're growing up, you guide them, direct them in a different way. They grow up, you kind of have to let them find their way. Yes.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you still want to give them that advice. You can't make them do things then, especially the ones that are grown. But you still continue to chat with them, and hopefully they have an open ear about what we see and what we're dealing with and what we're in front of, and how they can utilize information now and or start learning XYZ now to position a better future for themselves. And that's what's all about. We wouldn't want them to obviously be working in manual labor their whole entire life. Okay, so we guide them to a direction of, hey, learn how to do what you want to do and make money at it. But at the same time, grab a high value skill set and really learn that and learn how to sell that to people and organizations as well. I learned how to position that in the marketplace.
Right. Yeah.
Definitely.
Easier said than done, of course.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's I think about it. I was talking with Michelle last night, right? And Rachel was in her room for like the last 3 hours. I go, we got to get this girl out of her room because we've been talking about it for quite some time, you know. And we've gotten better, and that's part of the reason why we bought the dog for about a year and a half ago, and so forth. And it's really helped. But just noticing her in the room, and a couple minutes later, she comes walking out, right, and comes in our room, lays in the bed between us for a while, and we're watching that movie, the Netflix, speaking of Netflix, was it the karate movie, Cobra Kai, what is it?
Cobra Kai, Netflix, Cobra Kai. Yeah, Cobra Kai.
Cobra Kai, yeah, yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. And so yeah, she hung out with us for a while, and we looked over at her after about 20 minutes, and we could see the expression on her face. We said, okay, you wanna go back to your friends on your iPhone chat stuff?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I hear you. This other topic that Trudy and I had a little bit of discussion on goes back to work that I had when I was first starting to work with McKesson out in San Francisco. This is as part of the big Y2K scare, and everybody needed to move their technology over because the year 2000, you only had two digits, meaning you didn't look at 1999, you only looked at the 99. And so in the year 2000, the computers would get confused, wouldn't know if you're talking 1900 or 2000. So it would create a lot of issues. So for that reason, it drove a lot of new technology advancements for organizations to move over to what's known as ERP systems, Enterprise Resource Planning Systems, chief among those being SAP and Oracle back then, JD Edwards and Bond and others were companies that I worked with in Latin America and in France and Europe before working with McKesson. So McKesson needed to move over to this new technology. And one of the big issues that we had was you got all of these forms that have to get digitized, right? So you think about all the medical forms for all the different places around the world. And McKesson is like one of the leading companies that provides all the distributors, the distributorship for anything that you go into, you know, at a, you know, a drugstore or many of the hospitals or whatever. So they're like one of the major players in this industry. And we had to do what's known as EDI, electronic data interchange, meaning connecting different systems of smaller vendors to the larger ERP system to move right. the data. But a lot of those companies just basically said straight up, I'm not doing it. And they weren't going to do it because they're too small. They don't have the technology. They don't have the people, the resources to move that stuff over. And for the longest time, even to this day, they still use a lot of handwritten papers and documents. we are having a big, huge issue around the country, not just in the healthcare industry, right? Trudy was telling me about the government. I'll let you chime in here on the government here more. But I know when I was in the military and in the government, we did forums like crazy. And at one point, Air Force Academy asked me about coming back and completing a PhD through them and going, you know, back and teaching at the Air Force Academy. And then they sent me a big package of things I would have to do, to include filling out everything in triplicate or up to 7 different copies of the information of forms. Mm-hmm. And then I remembered why I left the military and the government. Mm-hmm. And I decided not to do it. But it's still a problem, Trudy. What are you guys facing? You guys deal with a lot of forms, right? With the small businesses and things. You guys said
you have to substantiate everything in the form of a form.
Right.
Yeah. Many forms now, mm-hmm. fortunately, are online.
Right.
And most people, for the most part, do seem to fill it out at this day and age. They'll fill it out online. Mm-hmm. It is typed. Signatures are needed. But when there's an explanation that needs to be stated, or there's additional information where you're trying to include additional information to mm-hmm. that form, then that's when it'll come in a handwritten form, or, you know, sometimes it'll be both type and written. And, you know, just a side note, also in the teaching industry, this is an issue where, you know, you can't even teach anymore. That's you're pretty much a scribe. You know, and doctors too, kind of like what you're saying in the medical industry. That's why they're so frustrated. That's why they became PAs, because the doctors are like, hey, you know, we're getting sued all the time. We have all this paperwork. I don't even get to see my patients. I have to spend more time scribing than I can seeing the patient. So yeah, here, you know, I work with complex accounts, and it has to do with really transcribing information that comes in into a format that is understood. And then being able to look at many different accounts sometimes to gather all that information and put it in a format where I can then see what's needed, see what's missing, and then contact that client and let them know what they need to do. But yeah, I mean, more than 50% of my work is deciphering that data into a format that is easily understood. And it would be so great to see it in this second picture here, where I can easily, because that's what I'm doing. I'm putting it all in this type of format, like it's shown in the second data there, in a text document, a notepad type format. I use OneNote.
Right.
And then, you know, putting in a way where it's easily understood. So yeah, it would be so great to have that information in that second format mm-hmm. already. That would take away so much work, and then be able to,
Right. So what we're working on to address that problem is, before, what would happen is you would have, as long as you had text information, you knew exactly where the fields are, you had this thing called OCR, optical character recognition. Anytime you do scanning of forms and things like that, if it's perfectly written, you know, typed or printed, then it could pull the information. And as long as it's always in the same spot on the form, last name is always first over here, then in the second, you know, column, you know, the first name and then the date, and all the information is always lined up the exact same way in every form, you can use OCR technology. Well, when we dealt with Express Scripts, every medical facility had their own forms, right? So everything was in different places and everything. So we had a really big challenge. And Express Scripts is the company that handles all the back office operations anytime, you know, for like 3 or 4 out of every 10 of your prescriptions that you order, right? At a drugstore or anywhere else, hospitals, they manage all of that stuff behind the scenes and get your drugs sent out to you So that's what their job is to do. So they're dealing with a lot of forms, right? We're currently at RTI Surgical, we're dealing with a lot of forms because we have surgeons that use our biological implants. And once they use these, the government requires that they send information back to us so that we know that this particular, you know, implant was put into this particular patient on this particular date. So if there's any a product recall or anything, or like, you know, CSI movies where someone, you know, gets killed and they're trying to trace and figure out the identity of the person, then they can go and they can find like an implant, they trace the number back, and someone, small company, pulls it up and says, oh yeah, this was implanted in this person. So for all sorts of legal, financial, and regulatory reasons, we have to keep track of all this information. But this is a huge number of documents that come back. I won't give you the exact number, but just a huge number. And the number of people that are required to just sit there and type in into this information every day, all day long, 24/7, is no different than what you see in a lot of other organizations around the world. So artificial intelligence is now making it possible. And what you're looking at here is an example, right? So I can take a form that someone has written something handwritten on it. And what we've done is you can take it, you can pull all the text as well as the handwritten information, convert it into text that's shown below. And then you can take that information and send it into a specific, you know, Excel spreadsheet or a QuickBooks or MySQL database or Oracle or, you know, SAP database, whatever type of database you need to look at the information. And so that is aided not by the traditional OCR, but a thing called intelligent character recognition that's in its infancy. And what we're doing right now is I'm showing you an example. On the far right, we have a large screen of this particular case. It's a robotic process automation software called UiPath, but Automation Anywhere and a few others are some of the tops in this area. Google, Microsoft, all the major tech companies are now coordinating with and integrating their software with UiPath. So in this particular case, we've got set up here an artificial intelligence tool that goes in, it looks at a form, it sees the form, it extracts the data from the form, it puts the data using a Google AI vision algorithm, pulls that extracted handwritten information, connects it to the text information, and then brings it into a specific column and row of a spreadsheet so that it can be put into a database. So that is one of the cutting edge technologies that we're working on. And we'll have an opportunity to show you guys more and explain more of this in some of the coming sessions. But I'm just going to go ahead and hit this just to give you an idea. I'm going to run this algorithm right now. And you can see that it's ready to start. And now it's just asking me, where do I want the robot to go to, what folder to look at the forms. I click on that, and now it's running that information and checking it. And now it just finished. And what it just finished doing was going through and extracting all of that data. Now, in this particular case that I just ran, it looked at 10 fairly large forms that normally would take each person to enter the key data, not all the data, but just the key data from this form, would take them about 2 or 3 minutes. It just did 10 of those in about 15 seconds, maybe 10 or 15 seconds. That's the future of what we mean about work, right? So if you can imagine that for every, you know, 10 minute task, a machine can do it in 10 seconds, you're on your way out of job, right? Unless you put yourself as a human in the loop and you use this technology to augment your skills and be more productive, you are going to be outsourced, right? Not by someone from China, not by someone from Mexico, but from an artificial intelligence robot that are currently being invented as we speak. That's what we're talking about in terms of thinking about your skills, thinking about opportunities, and staying in touch with let in but left out, because we'll tell you how to, you know, let in the opportunities and not be left out on the money. So this particular topic for the day has really been focused on just some examples, you know, whether it's Netflix, whether it's YouTube, self-driving cars, the future, what's happening in the oil and gas industry where people may lose their jobs, trucking, where self-driving cars may take over, robotic process automation, where a lot of hand and key entry strokes and office jobs could be replacing people. And that's what Yuval Harari refers to as the useless class. The useless class being not the middle class, not being, you know, the working class, but being a class of people who the government, the military, companies no longer see as useful. Obviously, they're useful to their family and to people that they care and love and take care of. But from the perspective of governments and other institutions, they may consider them useless. And consequently, they may never have opportunities to get back in the workforce. So that's exactly what we mean when we talk about AI and the future of work. I'm going to turn it over to you first, Trudy, and then over to you, Grandison, for last closing remarks. And we'll finish up for the day.
Well, we've certainly learned a lot. You know, we've just learned a lot about, you know, what's going on in the news today, and then really bringing that down to, you know, of course, the book and the benefit of it, and just really being able to transition, the importance of transition, yeah, and the different things that may fog our brains, but how we really need to get focused. And we also understand now that we need to speak to the person as to where they are to help them get to where they want to be. So we don't want to forget that either. Yeah. Great podcast, YouTube. I enjoyed it. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Our pleasure. Grandison.
Awesome. Yeah, it's great having you on to join us, Trudy. We have to do it again. The final thoughts. Definitely. It's all about making sure that we stay current in our own, not just in our own right, but in society, so that we can continue to provide value for those who we are either working for or family members, whatever it may be. Just continue to evolve. My whole mantra for this year is think different. That's the whole thing. Think different. I know it's think differently, but think different is the mantra you're running with. It is all about how you can evolve your mindset, not about changing it per se, but just how do you evolve your mindset to continue to grow and become what we want to become so we can continue to add value. That's tremendously important. That's where my focus is for this year and the years to come. Obviously, we've been thinking of, but I wanted to encapsulate it into something that's very powerful, and that's what we're running with. So those of you who are listening to this podcast, take the time to learn how to think different.
I like that. A great summary from both of you. Transition word from Trudy and think different from Grandison. This has been Frank Shines with Trudy out in California, Grandison in Arizona, and me back here in Tampa. Go Bucks! Super five. You guys have a great day. We'll see you next week.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.